fans, welcome in to the Green 19 podcast. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I have a couple guests with me today. They are PackersNews.com reporters Pete Doherty and Ryan Wood. They are in Orlando at the Packers, or I should say the NFL league meetings. I actually don't know what we're supposed to call them. It's the owners meetings or the league meetings or the NFL meetings. I don't know what the terminology is, but that's where they are. And they have been listening to a number of people around the league speak. That includes Matt LaFleur, Mark Murphy, Brian Gutekunst. A lot to unpack and digest. They are coming home to the cold weather. I'm afraid they have to leave warm Orlando behind. But I want to start with you, Pete. I know that this might be not that important an issue to start with, but it's the thing I'm most interested in. You wrote about the kick returning thing. There is a rule change that is going to dramatically overhaul the kickoff process in the NFL. A lot of people have been talking about it, commenting on it. It's especially pertinent for the Green Bay Packers because they just signed Keyshawn Nixon to a 3-year deal. And he's, you know, part of that is being back-to-back all-pro kick returner. That's kind of, you know, that's kind of one of his strengths, obviously. So I'm curious, again, you wrote all about it at PackersNews.com, but give me the general lay of the land on how you feel this rule will impact Nixon, will impact the Packers, and will impact the league at large.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know, I mean, the kickoff had become a nothing play, so I think the league had to do something. And the Packers should benefit from it because Nixon's a really good return guy and, you know, one of the best couple in the league. But what I'm not sure is how big that benefit will be. You know, I talked just one clip on Twitter because they based this off an XFL, how the XFL did it the last 2 years. And, you know, because the coverage guys are lined up so far downfield and they only have to go 5 yards before they're run into their blockers, it's just this white line, this line of guys coming up. And, you know, on a kickoff, guys get all spread out because you have blockers to sift through. Some guys are getting blocked, some aren't. And this was just a wall. And so on the clip, I just saw a clip of one return. The guy got up to the wall. He kind of went to the left and got tackled after getting through it a couple of yards. And there it was, zero threat to go anywhere. And so I just wondered, I looked it up, and I think there was one kickoff return for a touchdown last year in the XFL out of, it was like 350 or 400 returns. And the NFL had four in like 600 and some returns. Or five, maybe it was the upper 500s. And the year before, the NFL had six, which is, you know, it's still more. So, the starting line will be farther because the kickoffs are shorter. So they're the NFL's projecting they'll be the drives will start on average between the 28 and 29 on kickoffs instead of the 25.2 last year. But I'm not sure if we'll see longer returns or not. Murphy described it as he thinks, you know, coaches are smart and they'll figure out some ways to make it, you know, to get some big plays. But he said it's going to look more like a punt. Because they saw a lot more highlights of it, that it'll look more like a punt than the current kickoff. And I wonder if, in the long run, if the best kickoff returner, you know, now you need kind of a slightly bigger, faster straight line guy on kickoff returns. I wonder if the best kickoff returners with this are going to be guys who are punt returners now, smaller, really quick, short area quickness guys. I don't know. This is all – it's a whole new world, so we'll see.
Could this be why Mark Murphy was one of three with a vote that cast a vote against it? I've been wondering since yesterday why in the world you would vote against a rule designed to have more kickoff returns when you have – the best kickoff returner in the league. Like, it just doesn't – it doesn't make sense. It's like when, you know, the Packers had Aaron Rodgers, like voting against rules designed to maximize the forward pass. Like, why would you do that? It just doesn't – it didn't compute in my head. Could this be the reason?
It might be they don't think their advantage will be that great for that reason. Huh. I kind of take them – I mean, you know, it's always dangerous to take anybody in the NFL – at face value on anything, but I kind of took them at face value that they're just concerned about unintended consequences. I was reading through a bunch of the quotes. You know, McKay had to do a lot of he was doing a lot of jawboning this week. I saw him talking to Matt LaFleur. Ryan and I saw him. We were walking around the hotel, just going from one event to another, and there was McKay talking to LaFleur one-on-one, and from what, you know, from what I've heard, McKay was buttonholing everybody around the league, you know, working it like a congressman, you know, trying to get this thing passed. So I suspect that's what they were talking about there. But I think the Packers probably were just concerned. I don't know if it was Murphy's call or Gutekunst's. They're concerned about the unintended consequences, but they got voted down, to say the least. I mean, it was 29-3, right?
Yeah, Mark Murphy, the face value there is him saying what you're saying. I wanted to test it out as a preseason concept before having it be approved for the regular season, just to sort of sort out some of those consequences, maybe implemented in 2025. That's what he said.
And you know, JR, I'm not sure that that would have been how feasible that would have been, because how do you do that if you're doing it the preseason? Because you're preparing for a different set of kickoff rules than you're going to have during the season. So how many teams are going to want to spend any time doing that in practice when they're not going to be doing it during the regular season? So I'm not sure that would have been the greatest way to practice it.
Well, that's why I think coaches had to be talked in to this, because they've got a million things on their plate already. They don't want another thing, but this is another thing now, right? This is another thing that they are going to have to teach, instruct, to strategize for. When the kickoff had become a nothing play, we're almost like the old extra point, even the extra point now, but especially the old extra point where you just, okay, line it up and get the point. You know, just, you know, one thing you don't have to worry about. Now, this is something they are going to have to worry about.
Yeah, you're going to get more kickoff returns for sure, the way this is set up. So Keyshawn Nixon is going to be busy, but you were getting kickoff returns from him anyway. You know, 5 feet into the end zone, no problem. Yes. Heck, back, you know, just have his back foot right next to the back line. He's still going to return it. So you maybe aren't gaining anything, but especially if you're going to see fewer touchdowns. I think the problem that is a bigger issue, more of an existential issue, I mean, people will adjust to this. Every new rule, you know, there's always a period where fans don't know what to make of it, but like, I really had to like focus my brain on understanding how the new kickoff would look. I had to watch video, you know, what's different. And it's similar with the banning of the hip swivel tackle. Like, I've seen footage of it to know exactly what that is, and me, somebody who follows football, it's like, well, is that a hip swivel or is it not? Is that how the new kickoff is going to work or not? Like, these things are very complicated. And I think fans are already still talk about, is it a catch or is it not a catch? We'll have a hard time adjusting to this. Do you, Ryan, do you think it's easy? I mean, am I maybe just being the dumb football guy, not understanding this is kind of a me thing? I feel like a lot of people are going to have trouble figuring out how this works.
Well, let's have a pop quiz, okay? I'm putting myself on the spot. I'm either going to nail this or I'm going to look real dumb. So we'll see how this goes. But my understanding is, so if the kickoff is back on the fly in the end zone, then it's at the 35. If it's fair cut or if it,
it's the 30. They moved it back 5 yards.
Okay, the 30. Mm-hmm. But if it's fair cut inside or outside the end zone, it's to the 20.
Yeah.
No, you can't fair catch.
No fair catch.
If it bounces outside the goal line and rolls into the end zone and is down for a touchback, then it's the 20. So they want both sides have incentives to return to have a kickoff return.
Yeah. So they want.
So you botched this.
Yeah. So I botched this. I feel like I'm right back in school. Like, this, nothing's changed in all these years. I'm still flunking tests. This is great. But you know, that kind of serves to your point. Like, yeah, this is going to take some getting used to. I think there's a reason why the hip drop is going to be more fined than flagged. Because of what you just said, JR, because it's going to be so bang-bang, especially right out the gate, in live-action play, is it they're going to go back and they're going to review and be like, yeah, that was, you're fine. Because it's going to be difficult to penalize. I really wouldn't want to be a defensive coordinator in this league anymore. You know, the NFLPA obviously wanted the hip drop to remain legal. They felt like it was a non-malicious play. They felt like it was a natural play. It's a natural tackle. If you're coming from that angle, your job as a defensive player is to get the ball carry on the ground. That is how you play defense, by tackling, by getting the ball carry on the ground, which in turn is how you keep offenses off the board. Now you can't rush the passer. There's a great line from Weston Hockwitz Packers.com when we were waiting for Brian Gutekunst on Monday. You can't rush the passer now. You can't cover the receiver, and you can't tackle the ball carrier. How are you supposed to play defense? I don't know. It really is.
And you're going to drive starting at the 30 if you kick it in the end zone, which is like what, 40 yards away from the nearest field goal at work. You know, like that's
So now everyone's going to complain. This is like the NBA where you got all these points and no defense, but like you can't play defense in this league. And if your intent is to regulate, legislate injuries out of the game, where's that line in? Because injuries are inherent to football. It's 100% injury risk. Now, fully support and understand that you need to protect the brain as what best you can. I understand that. But injuries, the hip's going to get injured. Knees, ankles, shoulders, hamstrings, soft tissue mesh, that's going to be an injury. If you play football, that just is. So to try to legislate those things out of the game at the expense of being able to play defense, you wonder if that's something that's going to come back and hurt the game. I think that's why the NFLPA wanted this play to remain in the game.
Pete, you wrote about Jeff Hafley a little bit and how he's going to have to mold his scheme to fit the players that Brian is bringing in. You heard this week from Gutekunst, from Matt LaFleur, from Mark Murphy, and I wonder if that was sort of your biggest takeaway, is kind of seeing, you know, hearing again how Brian Gutekunst, how he evaluates players, the type of players that he likes to bring in. If not that, what else stood out? I mean, a lot of these interviews are, you know, answers we've heard before, nothing too dramatic or anything. But what did you glean from your time in Orlando that you really that really will stick with you?
That story was, I went in with the intention of talking to with the head coaches who Hafley has worked with, and I did. And they're just, I didn't get much interesting stuff out of that. But the Gutekunst answer, you know, because I, like when I do chats every week and I get a lot of questions about how this will affect their personnel. And we're all just guessing, and they just give generic answers because they don't want to alert the rest of the league on what their thinking is. So we won't know until Gutekunst drafts, until they put players on the field, assuming Hafley lasts a couple of years. You know, what kind of, how the guys they're drafting and signing are different than what they were before. But Gutekunst has, you know, some really well-defined traits that he thinks are a must if you're going to win in this league. And I think it doesn't matter what scheme you're running, you know, he thinks that's important. And I know big edge defenders is one of them. Doesn't mean, you know, Von Miller, if a young Von Miller is available, I think he was only, he was listed at 240, and I remember hearing he played at like 235 or 230. If he's available, you know, you never pass a chance on a guy like that. But I just find it hard to believe Gutekunst is going to start signing very many more 245-pound edge guys. You know, he likes them 255 to 275, and the bigger the better. And part of being a defensive coordinator in this league is, and a coach in this league is, adapting to your personnel. It's a huge thing. And it's never the same. You can't, you know, San Francisco's got these two really good inside linebackers, and inside linebackers are huge in this defense. They have to do a lot of covering, more than other schemes. But you can't, you know, Hafley isn't walking into Fred Warner and Dre Greenlaw. So, you know, he's going to have to, you know, make some adjustments to cater it to his personnel. And I wonder if that was one of Joe Barry's failings. Was, if, you know, if Devondre Campbell's to be believed, and, you know, I think he was probably telling, there's a lot of truth in what he said. In his first year, he played inside linebacker, which is the way he wanted as far as reading routes and all of that. And he's an all pro. And then the next 2 years, you know, he gets paid. And so he does exactly what they're asking him to do. And he wasn't as good a player. Now his body's beaten up, and I think he's pretty close to being done anyway. So his play probably would have diminished anyway. But I wonder, you know, one of Barry's failings was he didn't quite adjust enough to the specific personnel he had and tweak his scheme for it. And that's a huge part of this job. And it's a real gray area, how much to give in and how much to adjust for players and how much your scheme is what your scheme is. So you got to, you know, to get the most out of the scheme, you got to do it that way.
Darnell Savage is, to me, the best example of this. Because Darnell Savage signed, and you might be surprised by this, I was a little surprised by this when I looked it up, he signed the second most lucrative contract as a free agent of all the safety class so far in free agency. Okay. Y'all know who number one is. It's Xavier McKinney. But Xavier McKinney's is like it's like three times more than Darnell Savage's. Darnell Savage is second at something like 3 years, $21 million. And I walk up to Doug Peterson with the Jaguars and I ask him, well, what do you like about Darnell Savage? First two things he said was he likes his nickel ability and his ability to be a blitzer. Two things that we almost literally never saw Darnell Savage do with the Packers, right? So there is value with Darnell Savage doing clear value, doing literally what he was not doing with Joe Barry's defense. With whether it's Xavier McKinney or Quay Walker or whatever defensive player that they have, they've got to use them the right way, you know? And we'll see with Darnell Savage. Maybe he can't play nickel either. I don't know if he can play nickel because I didn't see it. But the Jaguars sure think he can, and he paid him a fair amount of money to do it, even though he didn't do it in Green Bay. You got to use him the right way. You got to put your personnel in the right positions to make plays or you're going to struggle.
The name Micah Hyde just flashed through my head as you're discussing that. That's gonna...
We've seen it before. It was before Joe Barry. Dom Capers had the same thing, especially in the secondary. There's been a bit of a history here of mismanaging DBs and not having them in the right position. Micah Hyde was not a nickel like the Packers thought he wanted. They wanted him to be. They thought he was. He was a safety. He goes to Buffalo. He's a Pro Bowl safety. You got to put your players in the right position.
Pete, the last time we talked, the last time Ryan and Tom and I talked, we discussed the possibility of a world where Aaron Jones and Josh Jacobs could coexist on the same roster. I think came to the conclusion probably not, but maybe, you know, maybe there was a window there. You've heard now Brian Gutekunst speak about that, and I'd be curious on your thoughts if you think there is any scenario where the two of them could have coexisted. I got the sense hearing from Gutekunst that, yeah, maybe not. Maybe there was just no leeway where Aaron Jones would have dropped down his you know, taken a pay cut at all and had that work out for them in the salary cap realm. But how do you feel about it? I know that was one of the topics of conversation too.
I mean, I think if they had wanted to, really wanted to, they could have easily done it. I think if they'd offered Jones, you know, basically the deal that he signed with the Vikings, maybe it would have been a hair better. Even if he was going to be Jacobs' backup, I think he would have signed it. Because it sure seemed like he liked it here, and the pay is the same. And, you know, less wear and tear on him. So that would have been a hugely dynamic backfield, but I, you know, you can tell, you read between the lines of what Gutekunst has said, he had major concerns about Jones staying healthy. You know, even and last year he had huge health issues, but all we have, our last memory is those last five games, you know, but he missed a lot of games before that while hurt. You know, with the hamstring injuries and the knee injury, and he's 29, going to be turned 30 next season. And I think Gutekunst had huge reservations about Jones's body holding up and him being able to make it through the season, him being available, even with fewer carries and touches, him being available in January. So I get the sense that they, you know, they probably knew. I have to think they knew with the offer they were making Jones that there was a decent chance he wasn't going to take it. If they had wanted to, they certainly could have created the cap room to do it. It would affect future caps. I think that's a big factor in his mind, in the GM's mind. But sure, they could have done it. It would have been a really, really interesting backfield. I mean, either one of those guys on the field is going to really scare defenses and change the way you play and make your quarterback better. But I understand why they didn't do it, and I understand the concerns about Jones's his durability for the season, and that the money could be better spent either this year or saving cap room in future years and being able to go after free agents 25 and 26. So I get it, but I don't think it was unfeasible for them to bring him back. It just would have been a huge investment at running back, which, you know, I don't think I looked it up. If they had paid him $7 million, he'd have been the highest paid back. He would have been made twice as much money as the next highest paid backup running back in the league.
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot to ask. I can't. If you had told me at this time, you know, like 2 months ago or whatever, Aaron Jones will be a Viking and AJ Dillon will still be on this team as the backup.
Yeah.
I just, man.
Something would have gone wrong there with that picture.
Yeah, you would think. You would think.
Instead, they got Josh Jacobs. So they're, and you know, JR, the Packers are stinging a little bit. They have to be stinging a little bit to see Aaron Jones with the Vikings. It's not what you want for a player that's meant as much as he has to this organization, right down to the last five games he played for this organization, right? But all over the years, too. But the Raiders are hurting way more. I mean, Antonio Pierce, when he was asked about losing Josh Jacobs on Monday morning, he winced. You watch the he winced. He said straight up, that one hurt. Like that was because the Packers are going from Aaron Jones to Josh Jacobs. The Raiders are going from Josh Jacobs to scratch, right? They have a young running back they feel will be good, but they don't have a star, like a proven star, the way that the Packers do, to an extent with the way the Vikings do, right? You'd rather be the Vikings than the Raiders. The Packers made all right out of this running back shuffle in a way that the Raiders clearly didn't. But I like what Pete said, and I asked Brian Gutekunst point blank, were you tempted to keep Josh Jacobs and Aaron Jones together? I don't know how you couldn't be, because if you have the two, that's the perfect role for Aaron Jones as an age 30 running back. Brian Gutekunst after the season said, when he said – that they wanted Aaron Jones back, they anticipated he would be back. He also said they've got to protect him. They have to preserve. So they knew, to Pete's point, that you know injury concern is a big risk at age 30. They knew that he had to be in a diminished role for his own good, for his own protection. How can you not be tempted by this type of setup? But it came down to the future cap. It came down to the fact that Aaron Jones. Final year of his contract would have been 2024, but by keeping him on 2024, there's then three voidable years after his contract starting in 2025, and they didn't want those voidable years. They wanted it to only go so far so that if they don't go over that line, you get rid of the voidable years. It really came down to that.
Mm. Another topic. Pete, I'll go back to you. Another topic is Jordan Love. I don't know if we learned anything that we didn't already know. This team clearly headed towards an extension with him. I thought you guys had something interesting that you said on one of your video recaps that you can find on the Journal Sentinel YouTube page, by the way, that when asked, why would they be so confident after basically a half season of really good Jordan Love play, would they be so confident to sign him to a multi-year extension? And I think it was Brian Gutekunst or Matt LaFleur, I don't remember which, saying, well, he's been in the building for 4 years. So they know the character is the person he is. They know this growth, or at least they have assessed that this growth is real, is genuine, and it wasn't just a flash in the pan. I'd be curious if you have any takeaways, Pete, about the Jordan Love situation, if anything has changed in your mind now that you've heard what everybody had to say.
No, you know, and I hadn't thought of it from that angle till Gutekunst said it, because, you know, they're going off still a fairly small sample. I mean, you know, a half a season of, you know, pretty, you know, kind of shaky football. Mm-hmm. Part of it was him. Part of it was young receivers. And a half a season of, man, that's pretty good, you know, football. So that's not a ton. But it does make more sense when Gutekunst said, you know, because they could still get this wrong and it could go badly. But when he said they've seen this guy, they've worked with him for 4 years now. They know his work ethic. They know, you know, how he treats other people, what the other people around him think of him. So they've got a lot more information to go on than those of us on the outside who only see what happens on the field. So that they have a lot to go on. It's funny, you know, I did talk to, you know, the first column I did down here was I talked to the four AFC head coaches who faced him last season. And when I was, you know, kind of implicit in their answers was this guy's a quarterback. He's for real. You know, it wasn't like, yeah, you know, I mean, you could just tell you definitely got the vibe that there are probably only a handful of teams, if that, who wouldn't sign this guy to a contract extension after he did what he did last season. There might be one or two teams that for whatever reason wouldn't do it. But a huge, huge majority of teams in this league would sign Love to a pretty big contract extension this offseason if they were in the Packers' shoes.
Ryan, it sounds like we're going to find out pretty soon about Brazil, about whether or not the Packers are going to be headed to South America for for a game against the Eagles at some point. I think that'd be the first week of the season. Down to the Browns and the Packers, according to Mark Murphy. And I mean, I don't know who ultimately makes that choice, but if I were choosing between those two franchises, I know which one I would personally go for, bias included, I suppose. What do you think? Are you looking up places to go, things to see in Brazil at this point? Have you done any of that research, or is it still too early for you?
Well, it's definitely in my head for sure. And there was a lot that came out of our conversation with Mark Murphy. Yeah. Good on the Packers for making him available at these meetings. He wasn't available last year. A quick note on Jordan Love, because I think that's pretty significant. Pete's right. It could go bad. Like, I thought it was interesting. Brian Gutekunst didn't deny that there is risk here with you know, a small sample size on the field and paying a mega extension. He didn't deny that. What he did was explain why the Packers are comfortable taking that risk. Now, on one hand, they have no choice. You know, I'd even go a step further, Pete. I don't know if any team at this point wouldn't do this kind of extension that's upcoming, because it's just the way that the business is done in the league. When you have a franchise quarterback, you pay him. You have to pay. There's no other choice that you have to, because, you know, the cap goes up next year, and one, you know, you don't want to have this guy get close to free agency. Then you're in a financial war that you're not now. Like, it makes no sense. You have to extend him with a mega deal this offseason. And if it goes bad, there will be revisionist history, and there will be people that look back and say, oh, they really screwed that up. No, they didn't. They really didn't. They had no choice. They did what they had to do, and that was give him the mega extension. I don't operate by revisionist history, so that's just the reality when it comes to Jordan Love right now. Now, as far as the reality when it comes to Brazil, that's going to be interesting, right? I would love to hear some truth serum on how the Packers really feel, how Matt LaFleur really feels about maybe playing another international game. Mark Murphy said if that opportunity comes, they'll be very excited. They fully support international games. But there's the logistical potential competitive disadvantage that Mark Murphy said about maybe having to bust down to Milwaukee to get a plane big enough to fly to Brazil. I'm not an aviation expert, all right? I don't know what the difference is, size of a plane that can take you directly to London from Green Bay in Brazil. It's a slightly longer flight, so maybe that's a real concern. I don't know, but that's what they're trying to figure out. Mark Murphy said that within the week, he thinks the Packers will find out whether or not the NFL is sending them to Brazil to play the Eagles, or if it will be the Browns. Obviously, the most important thing here is that it's a road game. It would be a road game. The Packers are never taking a home game out of Green Bay and moving it internationally. They are staunch on making sure that it's a road game. So that's what makes this viable for them. Mark Murphy said it was 50-50 in his mind right now, whether or not it would be the Packers or Browns. So they should at least know soon.
Fascinating to hear about the runway and how that could – the runway at Austin Straubel Airport and how that plays into this, because is it big enough to support a plane that can get them straight to Brazil and save them time, you know, whether they have to, like, connect somewhere or go, you know, like, more likely bus to Milwaukee or even to O'Hare, that they don't want to have to put up with those extra hours. I thought super, super interesting.
This is where it's interesting to be a sports reporter, because – I think from the outside, I've heard people say, oh, you write about sports. Yeah, predominantly. But you also have to – I've written stories about, you know, that required some medical expertise insight, some legal expertise insight, political, now aviation. Like, You hit everything in sports. It's a cross section for literally everything in society.
Pete, let's stay with Mark Murphy and politics and Green Bay infrastructure, I guess, is kind of what we're going with here. Kind of proud of that segue, actually.
That was good. That was very good, AR.
The lease situation with the city of Green Bay, it's also a very dense, complex situation. Mark Murphy spoke about it a little bit, frustration that the city of Green Bay has actually, you know, decided to put pause on talks over a lease extension, which the lease isn't up for another 9 years. You could even argue, based on some of the way the contract works, it's even longer than that. It's another 10 years beyond that. So I guess if you're the average fan, you're wondering about the urgency here. Like, why is this a central issue now? And what effects fans might see, you know, if there's certain construction projects that don't get taken care of in advance of, say, the 2025 draft, if that's something that fans should be thinking about and concerned about. Like, what are the things the average fan needs to know about this particular, I don't know if dispute is too strong a word, but what is going on between the Packers and Green Bay?
Yeah, this is getting, you know, well out of an area of expertise here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just don't know enough about this whole issue. I just can't do any editorializing because I don't know what I'm talking about. I've been covering the team since 93 and lived in Green Bay since 87. I don't remember the lease ever, like, I don't remember this becoming any kind of issue at all. I don't know how many times. I couldn't even tell you how many times they renegotiated it or extended it during that time. I barely even remembered that they had a lease, you know.
Yeah.
So this is unusual in that way. But I don't know who's got the better argument between the city and the team. I don't know enough about it to know, so my opinion would be useless on that. It sounds like if they're putting off these infrastructure projects because of it, you know, that's not the greatest thing for Lambeau and for the franchise, because they want to move ahead on those things, you know, in a very timely manner. But other than that, I don't know that it'll affect. I doubt fans will notice much of a difference, if any. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's just unfathomable that this would not get worked out. And there's 9 years till the lease runs out and all of that. That sounds like the Packers want to do this sooner rather than later. It's going to get done. It's just going to, there's going to be more squawking and about it than I can ever remember anything close to in the past on this issue.
I think Milwaukee fans have their antennas up because here in Milwaukee, the subject of the Brewers and the lease was a very big story over the past year and a half. And the Bucks in the past have also had that. And like you said, the Packers haven't had anything like that. The story by our colleague Rich Ryman indicates the Packers ultimately would like to extend the lease to 2062. And I'm just like, well, I'm dead when that thing runs out. I'm not even going to worry about it at that point. It's years that I haven't even considered in my mind yet. So it's a different situation. Probably,
I mean,
not.
Go ahead, Ryan. I think an important part of this is I don't know how local politics local government works. I'm not a local government reporter, but I would think, again, I don't know this, but I would think there will be a new mayor in 9 years, right?
Presumably.
We know that there will be a new president CEO of the Packers in 9 years. So an important part of this is that there's a lot of, yeah, there's squawking now, but ultimately if this current regime on both sides don't work something out now, this will come down to different regimes. Like, this will come down to different decision makers. So, and they're never letting the Packers out of Green Bay. Why would they? The Packers, Mark Murphy made it extremely clear that we're going to stay in Green Bay. He said they're never leaving Green Bay. So this is really just squawking for the moment. And I'm not saying it's insignificant. It's significant, but it's going to get worked out.
Yeah. Do we know? Do we have a sense if there's any timeline as to when the Packers might name a successor to Mark Murphy, or, you know, on the other side of that, if there are other things Mark Murphy still wants to achieve before he's out of his current role, Pete? I mean, he's the title town district and now the draft are obviously pretty big things that he's checked off his list. But do you have any sense into that process at all?
you know, Rich Reimann, you mentioned, you know, he does the reporting on the business side of the Packers. He had a story on this, I don't know, it was a few weeks ago, a month ago, 6 weeks ago, and they put out a timeline. They've started, you know, they hired a search firm. They've set up a subcommittee of the executive committee and some board members. The process has started, and I think they said they wanted to get somebody hired. I think it was in 6 to 9 months and have that person work with Murphy for half a year or so. I think Murphy's retirement will be in July next year. So they wanted to have that person, you know, working with him for half a year or so. So I think if I remember right, it's something that we could probably expect to be done by the fall or really early next year. That might not be exact, but that's, you know, I think that should be close enough to give people an idea.
All right. Every good podcast conversation, just like every good story, needs a good kicker. Greg Joseph is the new kicker in Green Bay. He was signed one of a couple names, I guess, who will be giving Anders Carlson some competition as the year goes on. Greg Joseph is not a small name, Ryan. That's a guy that Packers fans know from his time with the Vikings. And I don't know if his numbers say, well, this guy is definitely going to be your kicker in 2024 to this point. But what did that say to you? Do you feel like that is a genuine possibility, or that they're just sort of like throwing a bunch of stuff at the wall to see what sticks? Oh, no, we lost Ryan. Pete, you're still here, right?
I'm still here. I think it's a little bit of both. Yeah. You know, this guy's more proven competition for Carlson than the guy from Georgia. I don't even know how to pronounce his name, Palenzi or whatever it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So this guy's kicked in the league, and so he's legit competition. So I think that's, you know, they want to push this guy. I'm sure if they have their druthers, Carlson will just be much more consistent and win the job and be their guy for however long. But they have to give themselves viable options, because if he just doesn't improve enough, they can't have what they had last season with all those mixed kicks and especially those missed extra points.
All right, Ryan, you've returned to us. We're talking kickers. We're talking the Greg Joseph signing. Any thoughts there?
Well, let me talk internet real quick. My internet in this place is leaving something to be desired. I'll tell you that. I missed almost the entirety of everything you said because of the internet, but I heard throwing things against the wall and trying to hope something sticks.
Yeah,
and that's exactly what they're doing. You know, it's interesting. After we talked with Matt LaFleur on Tuesday morning, I turned to Pete in the media area. Like, we got through this entire thing and didn't ask anyone about kickers. But, like, I don't know what else there is new there. Like, it's very significant. It's a big deal because their season, in no small part, ended because of the kicking problem. I mean, it's a big deal. But there's nothing really new there, because that's exactly what they're going to do. They are going to induce, inspire, encourage, make mandatory competition every day of this offseason, hoping that iron sharpens iron. And ultimately, they want – when you draft a kicker in the sixth round, when you are the Green Bay Packers and you've had almost as an impressive kicking lineage over the last three decades as quarterback lineage, they want this – pick to be right. They want to get this right. They want Anders Carlson to improve and to succeed. But they're not going to just like bury their head in the sand and hope it happens. Like, they're going to be ready if it doesn't. So this is just more of the same, and I expect it will continue until and unless Anders Carlson shows that he does improve.
Yeah. All right, before we get out of here, you guys are about to come home from Orlando. Pete, we're inside a month of the NFL draft. Any thoughts as to where the Packers will go position-wise with that 25th pick? My mind on that changes regularly, daily. I have no idea. What do you think? Where do you think the Packers will be looking for that first rounder?
Yeah, I'm sure I'll change my mind 50 times between now and then. You know, it's I just think there are several positions that are very much on the board. Tackle and corner, for sure. Safety, although I don't know if there's a safety worth taking there unless they consider Iowa's DeJean a safety. I would never, ever discount the possibility of them taking a pass rusher, either interior or edge if they thought the guy had a lot of upside. I don't think they'd ever walk away from that. So those are the positions that most come to mind. Running back, I don't think there are any. Tight end, I find really hard to believe they'd take one of those. Yeah. Receiver, they'd have to think – this is just my opinion. They'd have to think the guy was really special to take a receiver in the first round. But there are, you know, at least four positions, if not four or five, that are on the – oh, an inside linebacker, but I'm not sure there's one of those who is a viable pick late in the first round. Maybe there will be, but as of right now, it's not looking super likely. But there are a lot of positions they could pick from, and you never know. Evaluations differ within organizations wildly, depending on which scout you talk to, let alone league-wide. And you never know which guy or guys Brian Gutekunst is going to especially like and which ones a lot of other people like that he's not so high on.
Yeah. Brian, your thoughts?
Well, like Pete said, there is a lot of positions where they could. I don't think there's a lot of glaring holes. This is a pretty well-constructed roster. When you look at what the glaring holes are, they obviously have to get another safety. They need another starting safety to go next to Xavier McKinney. There's a lot of flexibility there on who that might be because Xavier McKinney does everything well, right? So who's the best option that you don't have right now and then match it against whatever Xavier McKinney does well? Keyshawn Nixon sure sounds like he's going to be the slot corner. I would have thought that they might need a slot after the season, but they believe that Jeff Hafley can get more out of Keyshawn Nixon, and for that reason, and there's talent there for sure. So for that reason, he sounds like he's going to be the slot corner. Linebacker, whether that's a Mike, a Sam, and Brian Gutekunst rightly said, look, you're going to have three off-ball linebackers on the field 15% of the time because it's going to be nickel. So that, but they need another off-ball linebacker. But to me, there's nothing more important than the offensive line because you have potentially an elite quarterback now. That's what the Packers believe. They're going to pay him like an elite quarterback. He's certainly the franchise quarterback. There's nothing more important than protecting that investment as best you can. And so, you know, I asked Matt LaFleur because his passing game is based on quick timing, right? Get the ball out of the quarterback's hands. So I asked him how he values the offensive line with that kind of system. And he said it depends on the concept, but I thought it was really interesting that some of the deeper concepts in his passing playbook, they had to use not only tight ends but receivers at times to chip for added protection. So this Packers offensive line last year, the protection was just fine. Like it was not bad. It was not a problem, but it was also not elite. And when you have an elite quarterback, there's nothing more important than having elite protection for that quarterback. So I think that tackle, even interior offensive line, wherever best offensive lineman is, if they can get that even multiple times starting in the first round, I think that's a high priority.
Yeah, that's where I fall too. I think it's going to be offensive line. My oddball theory is Brock Bowers of Georgia, the tight end, falls all the way to the Packers. They end up trading back because they do not need a tight end. So that's my crazy theory. But I have no idea. No.
You know, you shouldn't gloss over that either. Think about that.
That'd be something.
That first of all, I don't think that's going to happen. But if that did, over the last decade, how many times would you say, okay, Brock Bowers falls back to the Packers? And they trade back because they actually don't need tight ends. They have tight ends. Yeah. Like, it is remarkable what they did in 1 year at that position because it was a decade where they didn't have – since Jermichael Finley, they didn't have a reliable, consistent, potentially elite tight end. And now they might have two. That's impressive.
I also would appreciate a receiver in the first round just to make everybody scream after all those years of not taking a receiver in the first round. They finally take one when they don't see they need one. Yeah, that would be fun as well, in my opinion. He is Pete Doherty. He is Ryan Wood. Find everything they have at PackersNews.com. They got you fully covered from the NFL league meetings in Orlando Now they're coming home. The NFL draft less than a month away. Lots to discuss still in the offseason here, Packers offseason. And we will keep you updated here at Packers at PackersNews.com, but also on the Journal Sentinel YouTube channel. That's where you're seeing us right now. If you're seeing our smiling faces or you're hearing us in your various podcast platforms, thanks for checking us out. We will talk to you again very soon. Bye-bye, everybody.